on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Invest Talk. I will be your host today, Luke Guerrero, and today is Wednesday, July 16th, 2025. We are officially over the hump. We are officially more than halfway through the month of July, more than halfway through the first month of the second half of the year, and more than halfway through the third quarter of 2025. And things are moving fast. Things are always moving quickly around us. You saw a whipsaw today in the market because of changing narratives, changing news. And so, another example of the power of not overreacting. Reacting, but not overreacting. And that's kind of our job here at Invest Talk, as I see it, is to help you understand how to decipher what is going on around you so that you can make informed investment decisions. To that end, as always, we will bring you a mixture of educational, that is, and actionable material. We have some very important stories for you today. But most importantly, the most important thing is what is on your mind through your finance and investment questions that you leave via voicemail over there on our YouTube or live throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we will go over those show topics that I have for you today. We will run down what happened in the market, but first, let's tackle this caller question.
This is Art from Tucson. I'm calling about a company, Bath and Body Works, Inc., BBWI. The stock's way down, and I'm wondering if you see any value in this brand, in this company, in a stock, and if this would be a good time to buy, or if I should avoid it altogether. And I'll listen on the podcast for your answer. Thanks for everything you guys do for us.
Bath and Body Works, I believe they sell candles. I know they do a whole lot more than that, but I think my first interaction with this company was my mom loved buying those candles when I was a kid. Now, this company is fairly large, right? It's a $6.6 billion market cap company, but it's been struggling, not just over the past year, but specifically year to date, down over 20% since the beginning of the year. The reason why? Well, a big consumer spending pullback with respect to discretionary spending. You see it in beauty product companies. You see it in a lot of these retailers that, well, these are the types of products that you can pass up on. Your candles, your soaps, your lotions, your sanitizers, home fragrances, the types of things that you can pare back spending when it is necessary. And so with sentiment coming down, with forward-looking projections of spending coming down, their guidance has trended downward as well. Revenue looking worse than they thought just 1 year ago. Comp sales, an issue. Input costs, an issue on the back of potential tariff disruptions. Margins headed in the opposite direction of where you'd like to see as well, right? Their net margin down from 11.8%, 10.9%, and now projected to be 9.9% at the end of their fiscal year, which ends next January. But if you look at the company, it has a decent amount of debt on its balance sheet as well. So it's not just the cyclical nature of what is going on that is affecting this company. It's got about $5 billion of debt. Its cash flow is falling. It does pay a solid dividend yield that is floating higher than it has been over the past 4 years. But regardless, the question is this a solid company to buy right now? And with what we saw out of CPI, with what you see with the read-through into PPI, which we'll talk about in a little bit, Costs are rising. Costs are rising. And so the projection of consumers spending less, that could certainly hold. Now, if you're in this for a long-term hold, this could be a good way to pick up some shares here, right? Trading at 8.6 times forward-looking earnings, five-year average of 12. And so, you know, even though it has a bunch of debt on its balance sheet, from a liquidity perspective, it looks relatively stable. I just don't know if in the short term you're going to see a turnaround in the market price. So for now, I'd keep it on my watch list until things start to settle down, until we start to get more of a clear direction on the path of consumer behavior. That is Bath & Body Works, ticker BBWI. Looks like we got our first live call from our friend Nick in Seattle, who has a question about FLMX. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Hey, Luke. I don't own this because I own EWW, which is a different Mexico-focused ETF. My problem with that ETF is it has a 50 basis point fee. And this one here, FLMX, has a much lower fee. However, it's a much smaller fund with less than, I want to say, $100 million in assets under management. What is the risk of having of owning a much smaller fund? Are there risks associated with that that would make me want to go with a larger fund like EWW instead?
That is a great question. So the core of it is, should you worry too much about fund size? Okay. One of the things that can determine fund size is when these funds were created, right? First to market, market movers. EWW first debuted in March of 1996. FLMX, the Franklin FTSE Mexico ETF, November of 2017. Now, I think I would be less concerned about the size of the fund and more concerned about the size of the fund manager, right? The sub-advisor here is Franklin Templeton. Very large investment manager, the custodian, State Street Bank. The money is held in a very, very large institution with, you know, which shows you the safety of your assets. One of the reasons why it is cheaper is because of the licensing of MSCI indices versus FTSE Russell indices. They do just tend to be cheaper, and so you can save costs there, right? The difference here is about 30 basis points in expenses. And so I wouldn't be worried just because one fund is smaller. It's more about who is managing it. Do they have a track record of above board behavior? Are they a big investment manager, you know, such that the fund itself isn't just going to collapse on the way to the company, which for Franklin, you know, that's certainly not going to happen here. And so the question becomes, you know, what are you really trying to target here? And what do you care about in terms of trading it, right? A larger fund is going to have more liquidity. And so that's kind of where I would think about the difference between these two things. Oftentimes, when you pay more in expense ratio, you're paying for something, right? In this case, liquidity, a different index. So either way, I think both of these funds are a decent way to get exposure to the Mexican market. And I certainly wouldn't be worried just because one is substantially smaller. Thanks for the call. Now moving into a break, and on the other side, we'll preview today's topics and look at today's market activity. Just like Nick, you can call in and talk to me live at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888 99 chart. You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like Roger liked Nick's idea, decided to call in. So let's go to Roger from Fremont, who has a question about HPE. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it.
Okay. Well, Hewlett Packard Enterprises, it is an edge-to-cloud company, engages in the provision of IT services, technology, enterprise product solutions, and services. Geographically, the revenue is pretty spread out, about 36% from the United States, 34% of it coming from Europe, about 22% from Asia as well, and then a mixture of other countries making up the other 8%. It's a pretty big company, $28 billion market cap, and has a little bit of debt, about $17 billion in debt. Now, the company is down about 4.69% year to date. And what some of the reasons why is, well, inventory challenges earlier in the year leading into the tariff announcement. You had pressure in its server segment, as well as you're getting a lot of competition from a lot of various businesses. And that segment makes up about 53% of its business. As NVIDIA has done very well, HP has, well, suffered a little bit from all the competition, but 36.7% return over the past 3 months. Why? Well, you're still seeing pretty solid demand growth in the other aspects of its businesses and revenue growth as well. Relative strength, picking up a little bit again over the past 3 months, but hasn't really looked great going all the way back to 2019. Now, margins, again, I mentioned were an issue, and that's really what has driven a lot of this downward pricing pressure. About 8.6% is where its margin stands this year, lower than a lot of tech companies that you will see, right? During the pandemic, about 12.3% net margin is where it stood. And because of this, you're seeing its forward-looking price earnings move back towards its long-term five-year average. Now, this is a company that's in flux, right? You're seeing positive sentiment over the past 3 months because it's shifting. It's pivoting towards this hybrid cloud and AI infrastructure business like a lot of companies are trying to do because that is where the capital is going. And it's delivering some pretty consistent revenue growth projections over the past 3 months. And so if it can be successful in this transition, which stands to be seen, picking it up at its about 9.9 times forward-looking earnings seems like a pretty reasonable place to do it. Now, that being said, right, there are some risks associated with this, especially given where the market is floating right now, where CapEx is right now. And should we have an economic pullback, well, companies are going to stop spending as much just at a time at which HP is trying to transition. So I think it's a pretty solid company, got reasonable debt levels. Its margins need to be turned around, though, for me, before I consider investing in this company. I would keep it on my watch list for now. I want to see it cut that trend in free cash flow. I want to see a little bit more success in its transition, maybe another quarter of successful earnings. This quarter, pretty solid. Looking forward to September to see what they can come up with. Thanks for the call. I don't know if you know this. We do mention it from time to time, and we love InvestDoc. This is probably one of my favorite parts of my job is, yes, talking to our clients, helping our clients, but getting to answer your finance and investment questions when you call into the show, when you leave them via voicemail, when you leave them on YouTube. And so we thought it would be pretty cool for those of you who like InvestTalk, who want to rep InvestTalk, to be able to do so. And so we opened up the InvestTalk store. If you head over to the InvestTalk store, you can see this polo shirt that I wear pretty much every show, I would say. I promise I do clean it. You'll see Justin's white polo shirt. You'll see various sweatshirts. You'll see mugs. You'll see a dad hat, they call them. You'll see my personal favorite item, the bucket hat. And so, if that is of interest to you, just head over to the InvestTalk store at investtalkstore.com. And maybe leave us a message on the website. Tell us if you want any additional merch. to be available. All right, we are headed into another break, this one a little bit longer. When we come back, we have a lot to go over. We'll go over our main focus point, big story on the macro data today, a rare story on cryptocurrency, more on investor sentiment, and hopefully more of your questions. If you want to talk to me live, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
It was certainly an interesting day in the markets today. After trading down for most of the day, all major indices finishing in the green, the Dow up 53 basis points, S&P 500 up 32 basis points, NASDAQ up 25 basis points, Russell 2000 up 1.06%. Today's upside came after choppy trading for reasons we will get into in a little bit. Outperformers included pharma, managed care, asset managers, airlines, biotech, and home builders. Big tech, mostly mixed, though Tesla was a notable gainer on the day. Relative underperformers included semis, oil majors, casinos, apparel, retail, and hospitals. Looking on the bond side, treasuries are mostly firmer. We did see a bit of bull steepening on the curve, though the 30-year to probably be chagrin of the White House, still unchanged. The long end really seeing a big jump on the news, which we'll dive into in a second. 30-year sitting at about 5%, just above 5% at the close. Dollar index was down 30 basis points on the day. Gold finished up 70 basis points. And crude oil settled down 20 basis points on the day. And so what really drove market activity was pretty multifaceted, right? You had a story that shifted in the morning. You had several congresspersons tweeting that the president was going to imminently fire Jerome Powell. And understandably, when the independence of monetary policy was threatened, market didn't really like that. Yes, you saw a 30-40 basis point downward movement in equity markets. But more importantly, you saw the 10 and 30 year just blow up. Now, it did come back down, right? Because right after that happened, or shortly after that happened, well, the White House said, or rather the president himself said, that he has no desire to fire Jerome Powell at this time. Elsewhere, we saw another cooler inflation print hit this morning with some accompanying hints of upward pressure on those tariff-sensitive categories. We'll dive into that because it's critical to dive into the numbers rather than just looking at the top line. A reminder, PPI is domestic prices as well, right? It doesn't include tariffs, contrary to what some people were saying. On the trade front, Trump said that pharma tariffs were coming soon and expressed comfort with his tariff letter strategy and how that's been going so far. High-level PPI, June core PPI, ex-food, energy, and trade, headline all unchanged month over month, which means it was a bit cooler than expected. Annualized core ticked down 30 basis points to 2.7%, the lowest level we've seen since July of last year. Little bit more of macroeconomic data, right? June industrial production up 30 basis points month over month versus the forecast for a flat reading, so positivity there. The Fed's beige book noted a slight increase in economic activity as well. And not really anything else coming from the Fed. No Fed speak today, or at least by the time this show airs. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, retail sales will be out on Thursday. Street looking for 10 basis points month-over-month increase in headline retail sales, while core retail sales seen up 30 basis points. All right, let's go to a question from our YouTube comment section. And this one's kind of appropriate given what our focus point is today, which we'll dive into after the break. And that is on REITs. It says, do you think ELS is a good REIT to own? Well, Equity Lifestyle Properties is a self-administered REIT. They specialize in lifestyle-oriented real estate, including manufactured home communities, RV resorts, marine properties, and seasonal rentals across 455 properties. And like a lot of REITs, they are down year-to-date, down about 7.27%, down 9.14% over the past 52 weeks. REITs being one of the worst-performing sectors on a trailing 12-month basis. We'll dive into that when we go over our main focus point. But the question is, okay, is this a REIT that I want to get into? Well, free cash flow guidance is okay, right? The range has been pretty stable over the past couple months. Price to funds from operation is certainly lower than it has been in quite some time, nearly the lowest it's been in 5 years. Revenue growth, pretty steady, right? You're seeing it actually fall a little bit year over year. And so the question is, right, is this being dragged down just because of the sector itself, or is it something specific to the company? And the fact that it's underperforming its sector by 6% in 2024 and another 6% in 2025 means that maybe, right, you are entering an area where what the REIT is owning is a problem. Now, we got a question earlier about Bath and Body Works, and one of the reasons why it was not doing well is people are paring back spending. Where is another place people would pare back spending? Vacation, lifestyle, real estate. And so because of that, when you're seeing revenue fall like this, well, maybe this type of specialized REIT is not where you want to be. That is Equity Lifestyle Properties, ticker ELS. On the next Invest Talk, we will look into this question. What is Coast Fire? Coast Fire is a strategy where you save and invest enough early in life so that your retirement nest egg can grow on its own through compounding, allowing you to stop making new retirement contributions. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls. We've already had two live callers today. Do you think we can possibly have a third? If you want it to be you, pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHARP. You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
I'm My main focus point today concerns this topic: why stock investors should take a closer look at REITs. With high interest rates and changing economic conditions weighing down returns, out of favor real estate investment trusts, also known as REITs, may now offer compelling valuations and attractive dividend yields. And that's the key of it, right? REITs are deeply out of favor thus far. I mentioned, when answering that question on ELS, that they have been one of the worst performing sectors over the past 5 years for a lot of reasons. Higher rates, structural changes like remote work and e-commerce, and many other factors, right? But what you've seen recently is potentially a telltale sign for contrarian investors, which is massive outflows, suggesting some possible capitulation and maybe some value-oriented buying opportunities. So really, what is the core of a REIT? Why would you want to own a REIT? Well, REITs are similar to bonds in that they give you income. They're for high-income focused investors. In the US, REITs can yield on average 3.8%. Internationally, that number can be as much as 5.3%. So certainly a good way for those who are concerned about income to achieve that investing goal. But interest rates have been a big problem here for multiple reasons. One, if you're looking for income from REITs, right, you're getting that 3.8%. If you can get 5, close to 4% on a 10-year treasury bond, far safer, that's a lot of competition there. And so as interest rates have been higher, less demand has existed for REITs. And at the same time, REITs fund most of their operations through debt. And so if servicing debt becomes more expensive, it becomes a more expensive enterprise to run a real estate investment trust. Now, recently, you've started to see REITs move a little bit more lockstep with the market, correlations reaching about 0.83, which is good because as equity markets have risen, so have REITs. But that may mean that its diversification benefit has been eroded away a little bit as well, right? As people are trying to diversify against asset classes, hedge against inflation, that hasn't really been the case at a time of high systematic inflation. And that's the rate part, right? There's the other part as well, which makes it so you have to really discriminate between what kind of REIT you want to invest in. Because there are many REITs. There's office REITs, there's tower REITs, there's a lifestyle REIT we talked about. There's commercial property REITs. And so when thinking about that, you have to think about the underlying trends, one of which post-pandemic has been a shift to remote work, meaning that office REITs and retail REITs due to e-commerce have been hit particularly hard. Now, with all that being said, this could mean that real estate investment trusts are at historic discounts. Many of them are priced at a decent clip below intrinsic value. And so, if you're the type of investor who wants to diversify a bit away from just being in equities, who is seeking income, and is looking for value opportunities, like my cat who's yelling out there, that's the type of investor he is, an income-focused investor, that right now may be a great time to look at REITs or REIT ETFs. All right, let's keep things moving and get to a caller question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh Mayfield in North Carolina. I've been enjoying your show for over a year now and wanted to call about a particular stock that I've owned for about a year on the recommendation of someone else. And I'm just having a hard time making heads or tails of the PE ratio and where this fits in or where it should fit into the portfolio I've already made. It's Myers Industries, MYE. I invested in this about a year ago and it was on a downturn. It went even further down. And I think it's safe to hold it and maybe wait for it to continue to start making some profits again, but I just wanted your idea on it as far as a long-term hold or if there may be a point to exit this. Love to hear your answer, and again, have been enjoying the show for about a year now. Thank you.
Well, we certainly do love it when our avid listeners become avid callers, so thank you when you have a question for calling in to the show. Now, Myers Industries is a diversified manufacturing industrial company. It has many metal products and plastic products like storage bins, fuel containers, composite mats, and does distribution as well through its distribution segment through Myers Tire Supply, which is the largest distributor of tools, equipment, and supplies for tire and under vehicle service applications. Now, its performance year to date looks pretty solid, right? Up 34.69%, up 58.70% in the past 52 weeks, or I'm sorry, in the past 3 months, but in the past 52 weeks, and you said you bought it a year ago, pretty flat, up about 95 basis points. And that's on the back of a very poor 2023 and a very poor 2024. Earnings, though, has looked a lot better. Gross margin was up 2.4% year over year, operating income up 53% year over year. Lower costs from SG&A looked good. They started a share repurchase program in 2025 where they've bought back, you know, a bunch of shares, which is something we like to see as well. But there's a market demand issue here. There's a sluggish market demand issue, and you can't escape poor cyclical conditions. It is a, you know, pretty small company too, about $550 million market cap. That's quite a bit of debt, $423 million market cap as well. And so if rates go higher, if rates move higher, the cost of debt financing becomes greater. It weighs down in particular on companies such as this one. We are seeing, or I am seeing, decent improvement in terms of where margins are moving, in terms of where cash flow is moving. But I think the risks out there are still pretty large. Its payout ratio, 280. 280 for that 3.67% dividend yield. That dividend is not safe. And so, given the prevailing conditions and what's affected the industrial sector, I might start to trim out of this, given the great performance over the past 3 months that has at least brought you back to being flat. Thanks for the call. All right, let's talk a little bit about U.S. producer prices. As I mentioned, PPI was a flat in June with a 30 basis point rise in goods prices offset by a 10 basis point drop in service prices. And if you looked at the headline, everyone thought, oh, great, tariffs aren't having an impact. PPI is flat. We've tamed inflation. Problem there is, well, there are some tariff-related cost increases. Communications equipment, home furnishings are beginning to show in wholesale prices. And PPI is about as pure a non-tariff-related wholesale domestic measure as you could have. And so just because the headline PPI number is flat, which judges domestic production, does not mean that tariffs are not having an effect. Core goods prices jumped 80 basis points, driven by what I mentioned, that communications gear, the furniture, gasoline also driving, being driven upward 1.8%. You also saw service weakness from travel. Hotel prices fell 4.1%. Airfares dropped 2.7%. Why? Not because fuel was cheaper, but because demand is lower. The reality is tariffs are, if you look in this report, raising business input costs. But weak demand and limited pricing power are keeping broader inflation in check. And so when you look at this report, from a Fed standpoint, what do you do? What do you see? You see there still is an inflationary impulse here. And at the same time, you see a weakening consumer spending base. Now you have your inflation and growth issues at odds. The market reacted pretty cautiously, right? I think a lot of it was subsumed by what we saw related to the news that the president might try and fire Jerome Powell. But one of the things I want you all to understand, and one of the things I hope to teach you, is you can't just read that article title. You can't just read the headline. just like with the jobs reports, just like with CPI inflation, PPI inflation, PCE data, wholesale inventory data, retail sales data, diving in gives you a clearer picture to truly understand what the data is trying to tell you. Alrighty, we already answered some voicemails, we answered some live calls, we did a YouTube question. So let's tackle another YouTube question. Now, this one is on stock TPL, and it says, hi, can I have your thought on this stock? Ticker TPL, sometimes it's hard to spell. And that is Texas Pacific Land Corporation. So what does Texas Pacific Land Corporation do? Well, TPL is a landowner in the state of Texas. It has surface and royalty ownership, so it allows revenue generation through the entire value chain of oil and gas development, including through fixed fee payments for use of the firm's land, revenue from the materials being sold from the land, and selling the construction infrastructure as well. As oil and gas, or oil specifically, hasn't been doing well, this company's been struggling, also down 10.7% year to date, down 22.77% over the past 3 months. Over the past 12 months, though, they're about 20%, because in spite of what's going on in the oil sector, they had record royalty and water services revenue. Water segment sales hit a record $69 million. Free cash flow stood at $127 million in that year. You're seeing this free cash flow growth. You're seeing these ridiculous margins, but just given the overhead of the business, right? Given the cost of goods in the business, that's to be expected in the 50s and the 60% range here. That being said, it's trading about 31.1 times forward-looking price to sales. It is a high margin, capital light model, the royalty model, right? You're getting exposure to the Permian Basin energy without getting the asset heavy, debt heavy types of businesses. And that has driven some impressive free cash flow growth from about $200 million to $500 million, just about 4 years. They've been buying back shares. That being said, though, I think this name's a little expensive. The market tends to agree with me here. About 6.8% short interest out there. So although this company's done well, it's had a good run in the past 52 weeks, in spite of it being down year to date and down over the past 3 months. Given its price pressure, I'm going to have to pass for now on it. Texas Pacific Land Corporation, ticker TPL. All right, let's keep things moving and play another question now.
I was just curious what you thought of the home building sector. In particular, I'm looking at NBR Homes. I'll look forward to hearing your answer later on. Thank you.
NVR Homes, within the home building sector, 98% of its revenue is derived from home building itself, and then an itty bit of mortgage banking. It's about a $23 billion market cap company. It operates through various segments in the United States. 100% of its revenue generation comes to the United States. It operates the Mid-Atlantic, Northeast, Mideast, and Southeast segments of the country. Let's look at its revenue growth. Kind of up and down, as the housing sector has tended to be in the recent past. Hit $10.3 billion in revenue in 2022, then down to $9.2, then up to $10.3. Back down to 9.8, and in that time, there's been a slow march of margins downward. From a high of about 17.1% net margin in 2023, down to about 12% is where it's projected to be, 12.9% that is where it's projected to be this year. It's also trading at the upper end of its five-year range, 17.1 times forward-looking price to earnings. And what's really driven this 10% loss in shares year to date? Margin compression, rising lot costs, waning housing demand. Do you think any of those problems are going to be solved in the next 12 months? Do you think rates are going to be substantially lower such that the overwhelming majority of people that have those golden handcuffs are going to want to leave their home and move elsewhere. Do you think rates are going to meaningfully move down to 4%, making homes more affordable? Do you think that demand for housing, aside from rates, is going to pick up such that revenue is going to grow and margins are going to expand here at a time when input costs are becoming a little bit more expensive as well? And so given that, right, they do a good job. They minimize their land owning inventory. It does lower risk from a business operations perspective. They're doing a pretty decent job in spite of everything that's happening around us. They only have about $1 billion in debt on that $21 billion company. They're consistently buying back shares. Their cash flow headed downward, but moderately. I just don't think in the short to medium term, it is likely that housing costs stabilize and margins rebound enough to drive this and justify where it's trading relative to where it's traded over the past 5 years. So for now, given what's going on in the housing sector, I'm going to pass on NVR. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART. And don't forget, cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open, and it is waiting for you to visit.
You learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I'm curious about the Realty Investment Group. Just curious what you guys think about that stock. What would be a good buy-in price? Or if it's something to stay away from, is it too volatile right now with the way the economy is? Just curious. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Take a look at O, Realty Income Corporation, one of the largest REITs, about $51.423 billion market cap. It is a monthly dividend REIT that acquires and manages freestanding single-tenant commercial properties under long-term net leases in the U.S., the U.K., and Europe as well. It has done better than a lot of its industry. It's up about 6.33% year to date versus the industry's up 5.7%. Revenue growing. Price to funds from operation, 13, which is near its low of 10.7. Its average of 15.4. And so this growth in this company is kind of surprising given what you've seen within the industry broadly. Now, it has seen some cap rate pressure, like a lot of companies, right? A lot of REITs, a lot of debt pressure. But in spite of that, it's delivering reliable revenue and what it's known for, dividend growth. I think some of the issues, is if you've ever had a Siamese cat, they're just crazy. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see him walk by the camera. But this company is known for delivering a dividend. But like many other REITs, I'm not so sure that it can outpace some of these cyclical issues, especially with yields so high, especially with opportunities for income out there. That is Realty Income Corporation, ticker O. Now, before we head off, I wanted to briefly mention something that after the pass of the Big Beautiful Bill, net interest payments will surpass $1 trillion in 2025, driven by the continuous high deficits, but also elevated bond yields, something that the Treasury Secretary and the President, the administration, have been talking about, right? And so one of the solutions they've been talking about is potentially using stablecoins as a tool to boost demand for short-term treasuries and lower borrowing costs. How does that happen? Well, somebody issues a stablecoin tagged to the dollar. How do they have to invest the assets that come in? Well, typically in U.S. treasuries. That's the whole point of some of the clarifications of the Genius Bill to clarify that regulation, allowing stablecoins to hold treasury bills, meaning the stablecoin market could grow significantly. Forecasts ranging from $1.6 to $2 trillion by 2030. Now, Research suggests stablecoin inflows may already reduce treasury yields, with small but measurable effects on the shorter term end of the curve. But higher short-term issuance kind of poses this rollover risk, right? Which is the risk that you won't be able to invest it at the same favorable rate when you are rolling over that loan. So if you lock in something for 10 years versus doing it year over year over year, there's a risk that the rates move against you. Also, a stablecoin boom could displace bank deposits. And bank deposits are a critical area for credit growth, for project funding. The key here is that when anybody tells you that anything, especially within the finance world, is 100% good or 100% bad, don't listen to them. There are trade-offs here. Flows do matter. It will affect markets. It can affect the financial system. It could lead to more foreign demand, less foreign demand, more use of the dollar, less use of the dollar. The jury's still out here. The one thing we do know, $1 trillion a year in interest payments, not sustainable. Alrighty, this completes another InvestTalk program. I thank you, Justin thanks you, again, my special guest, Kat, who was just in the ER for 48 hours, and if you watch on YouTube, he's looking great now. Odie joined us, and he thanks you for coming as well. If today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, whether or not you can afford to buy a house, if you should downsize on the house, save for your kids' college, that's why Justin and I are here, to talk directly to you, not just on InvestTalk, but through a portfolio review, which you can sign up for anytime at investtalk.com. Just click on the portfolio review button. Another thing, if you like this show, spread this show. Tell one friend who tells another friend who tells another friend that InvestTalk is available on YouTube, but on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. I really love doing this show, and I think we bring valuable insights to all of our listeners. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.